Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
Correct.
Talking about the second serial of the ninth season of Doctor Who, The Curse of Peladon, which consists of four episodes that aired from January 29th, 1972 to February 19th, 1972.
True facts!
And I want to give a special shout out to Bisexual Brigadier for getting us these DVDs. Thank you very much.
Thank you!
You can follow them on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. Thanks again.
You're the best.
Today we have returning Ice Warrior expert, Ashley Rayburn.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Good to have you. How you been?
Yeah, I've been good. Been busy, but good.
We've had a lot of great things happening with Ice Warriors lately, so it's good to be here talking about that.
You were a fan of the Empress of Mars episode, I'm guessing?
Yeah. There's been some really good stuff, and actually there's some good stuff that kind of comes out of, that relates to this this story, so I'm excited.
Also, this is the first podcast we've recorded since the 13th Doctor has been revealed. Yeah, so I want to say I'm excited. That's all I wanted to say.
It should be cool. At the very least, interesting.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. It's going to be something different, and we'll all experience it together.
I gotta say, it's the first time I've been excited since I heard Chibnall was taking over. I was a little worried about it, but I'm like, now at least even if it's like bad, at least there'll be something.
They're doing something new.
Something new that'll be like interesting to watch at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, let's get into The Curse of Peladon, episode one, which I've called The Princess of TARDIS. So we start on a stormy cliffside, which looks pretty cool. It sets the mood nicely. And there's some guys in robes, one of which is Patrick Troughton's son, right? Second Doctor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's his character's name?
The King of King Peladon.
Okay, so there you go. Title of the serial. I liked him a lot in this. I thought he was really good.
I think this whole serial is delightful.
So he was also in the War Games. And he was in Midnight in the new series as well. So he has a long history with Doctor Who as well as his father.
I remember him in War Games. I thought he was adorable in that as well. He's the one who had to keep an eye on the one bad guy.
Yeah, really small part. He was in that, and that's kind of where he got his acting start from. And then it's great to see him now still doing things. And the Troughton legacy has a long connection with British stuff, even dipping into Harry Potter and things like that with Troughton's grandson. So
he's the professor in Midnight, right?
Yes, he is.
Who is the grandson in Harry Potter?
The Dursley, Harry Potter's cousin.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Very cool. I did not know that. I know, was it Ian Chesterton's, is it his son or his grandson that's in Harry Potter?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's, I forget what character he plays. But you look at it and you're like, oh yeah, he looks an awful lot like Ian.
Shoot, what is his name? But he's the one who does like the announcing, right?
I think so, yeah. Oh yeah, Alfred Enoch is his name. He played Dean Thomas.
Oh, okay. From Goblet of Fire?
Looks like he's in all of them.
I think yeah. Goblet of Fire is the first time he's
like prominent.
Yeah.
Everybody is in Doctor Who and Harry Potter. It just happens.
They only have so many actors.
But after the political people here, the King of Peladon and all that show up, then we also have Alpha Centauri shows up.
I love them.
the aliens and stuff in this are just super weird, and I love it. They're very interestingly designed.
So, like, first of all, we're in basically, like, a medieval castle. Like, it's very much a fantasy setting. But then also, there are these council of aliens trying to decide if Paladin's going to be let in the group.
Right.
So it's like this high political fantasy thing, but in the future in space. So I'm already loving it a lot.
How would you describe Alpha Centauri?
You had said something that they needed to be wearing the cape because without it, they look too phallic. And I feel like that's part of the description.
Yeah, and that's pretty much kind of what the actors used to joke about as well, with those one-eyed monster jokes. But yeah, I think this idea of this hermaphroditic race of hexapods is pretty fascinating to me. This whole idea of the Galactic Federation is something that I adore. It's one of my favorite aspects. It's one of my favorite groups in Doctor Who, one of my favorite affiliations. It upsets me that it hasn't been used more in New Who. But yeah, you this is one of the first times you really get to see this collection of aliens. This is one of my earliest memories of just adoring Doctor Who. And last time I was on, I said I've been a fan for as long as I can remember. But because of this grouping of aliens, I love this serial, and much because of this. So
you have Alpha Centauri, which is delightful little green person.
They look like, what are those, like that kid show with all the weird looking, one of them is kind of phallic looking. What is that called?
I have zero clue what you're talking of.
They're like different colors. It was really popular for a while. All I'm thinking of is Wiggles, and it's not Wiggles. Yo Gabba Gabba. Alpha Centauri looks like a really well-designed Yo Gabba Gabba character with a cape.
Alpha Centauri, I'm going to be honest, is the only name I remember. Like, the other one is Head in a Jar.
it's Arcturus.
Yes.
Arcturus, yes.
Arcturus, not just Juice Head in a Jar.
Yeah, he's like...
It's very slimy.
It's a head in a jar with, like, a big robot body. He's constantly being, like, spritzed.
Then you have the Ice Warriors. There's two of them. And then you're supposed to have the Delegate from Earth.
Which, the Doctor just sort of...
So yeah, that's me.
Yeah, that's me. Rolls into it.
So the Ice Lord in this story, his name is Izlyr. It's Izlyr, which is where I get my internet namesake from. So I took it directly from this serial 20 years ago.
I remember when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay, that's where it comes from.
Yeah, so I spell it a little differently, but I love Izlyr. There's so much about this serial that I love, so...
I remember they first came on, and I was like, man, they look really well designed. Like, the green color pops more than it ever has before. And I was like, that's because before it was in black and white. Dumb.
Ooh, speaking of design, though, can we talk about costumes? Oh, man, the kings, all of them, they have, like, these very purple... puffy. I think they all have skirts. They're all very kilt-like. He has, like, these high boots and tights, and I love them.
They're very fancy.
They're very fancy.
And don't forget his hair streak.
Oh, I love that, yes.
And then the opposite hair streaks that are in the High Priest and Counselor.
Yeah, this is a very fashion-oriented court. They're all coordinated.
Which Joe Grant would fit right into.
Also, yes, Joe. Joe in the serial.
Good. She has things to do?
She's written like a person? Upset with some of the way that she's been handled so far, because occasionally they have a tendency to write her kind of childlike. I don't know, other characters are treating her sort of like she's a dumb kid. And in this episode, she's written like a person, and it's great. They've been like treating her not great off and on before this. And this is like the first episode where she gets to do things, and she's, yeah, it's just great. I love Joe in this serial. Who wrote this serial? Because I want to give him props.
You don't have that...
I don't have that Joe fact.
Brian Hales. So he wrote the other Ice Warrior stories as well.
Oh, so that's his thing?
Yeah, but I believe he also wrote something else pretty major, I'm wanting to think. So, yeah, he's written a lot up to this point. So he wrote The Celestial Toymaker, The Smugglers, The Ice Warrior, Seeds of Death, Curse of Peladon, and he wrote The Monster of Peladon as well.
Wow, he's good with the Ice Warriors. I don't know if The Smugglers and Celestial Toymaker were okay. I think Celestial Toymaker has a better idea than it does its execution.
But Team TARDIS lands not in this castle where all this stuff is going on, but like the cliff below it.
And the TARDIS falls off the cliff.
It's like raining and they have to like climb up the cliff. Like, I was like, I'm already tired. But they find a cave and sneak into that so they don't have to climb all the way up.
I think this might be the first time that the Doctor says the TARDIS is virtually indestructible. It may have come up before, but this is one of the few times it had up to this point when it falls off.
I think it is the first time.
It falls off and he's like, it'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
And also, as they're here, Joe is upset that she's missing a date with Mike Yates.
Which is basically a line that's just there to be like, that's why I'm in this dress. That's why I'm in this princess-style dress.
I was figuring they were going to do this eventually, sort of.
Her and Yates?
Put them together.
You're not a big fan of Yates. You just made a face.
I don't know.
Like,
I think
if you're
going
to date anyone, date Benton.
Yeah. I really like Benton. I like Benton a lot more than Yates. I don't know why. It's irrational. Like, Yates is fine. He's a good character. He doesn't do anything that, like, annoys me or upsets me. It's just that he's not Benton. I don't know. Maybe I have room in my heart for one unit guy. It's not the Brig.
You're just, every time Yates is on screen, you're like, this is not Benton. And you grumpy.
But there's even times when it's like Benton and Yates, like, team up. And I'm, like, fine with that. But I'm,
like,
still
annoyed. I think
it's
just that he was mean to Benton one time.
Yeah.
And you can't forgive him.
Rank has its privileges.
He stole his sandwiches.
Yeah.
And that's
rude.
That's not cool with you.
I still don't understand why Yates is above Benton.
Not in your heart, he's not.
And not in my heart.
Yeah, that's a great question because, well, Yates' story kind of unfolds in the next few serials, so you should enjoy where that goes.
Interesting.
Are you excited at the fact that Yates' life might be going not well? That's awful.
I don't know, I said this in the previous podcast. I just figured Benton would outrank Yates just because he's been on the show longer, which doesn't, that's not how it works.
You're like, he has seniority.
Anyway, there's this other guy. Is he, I think he's a, would you say Peladonian?
A Pell,
okay. His name's, is it Torbus, I think?
Yeah.
He gets attacked by a giant fuzzy thing.
Yes. Like a boar head bear thing, yeah. Is how you could describe it.
Minotaur-esque. I think he dies. Man, it's been a little while since I've seen this.
Come on, man. Get it together.
He does die.
There's this guy with the king who's basically, like, doesn't want him to join up. Yeah, he doesn't want him to join up with the delegate. And he says, like, this monster attacking is just, like, a sign that...
Because this monster has, like, religious significance.
And it's a sign that they need to not do what they're doing.
And that is Hepesh. Is his name, yeah.
And his whole thing is he doesn't like change, and he thinks if the king becomes part of this Galactic Federation...
Is he the Doctor Who
basically,
fandom?
This episode's about globalization. Just a little bit. And he thinks if he becomes part of this Federation, he'll lose too much of his sovereignty. That's his deal. And he's got a sweet beard.
So, but yeah, the Doctor and Joe show up. And stumble their way into being the delegates.
Yeah, they're like, why are you here? They're like, because we're the Earth delegates, probably. Don't ask too many questions about it. We for sure are.
Joe is a royal observer.
Yes.
She's not there to delegate, necessarily.
This is kind of delightful, because the Doctor's like, yeah, she's a princess. She's Princess of Earth. That's why she's here. And Joe's just like, yes, I am. I am royalty. You will treat me as such. I'm actually... have been waiting for this my whole life. She just takes to royalty very quickly, and it's delightful.
Oh, right before they come in, too, there's, like, Hepesh is saying, like, this whole thing with the monster is a sign and everything, saying that this beast will arise to save Peladon, and a stranger will arrive bringing trouble. And then, like, the Doctor immediately walks in, like, what's going on? I'm here to cause trouble.
Because he always has timing like that.
And the way they get... away with saying, yeah, we're the delegates, is like, our ship crashed and all of our credentials are on there. We don't have them on us. Sorry. Just gonna have to believe us. Because I guess the Doctor doesn't have his psychic paper yet.
No, that's a new series thing.
He barely uses his screwdriver at this point. I think he's used it once or twice, but hardly at all. Especially, and not in the way that it's used now, which is magic wandy.
Well, and it's never really used that way on the classic series. The ironic part about all that is the way it was used, and it really isn't used much more than what you've seen it used to this point, and the producers thought that was too much, so they blew it up and got rid of it. And then it shows back up in the new series. Well, it shows back up in the TV movie, but it shows back up in the new series, and it's used all the time.
Well, now it's
a magic wand.
Just also to sell toys, I feel like.
Yeah, you have to update it every so often so you can sell a new model.
I just saw the 12th Doctor one at work, and I really want it. It's like squarish. I like it a lot.
We're basically at the end of this first episode. Like, they're all kind of talking politics and stuff, and then a statue falls on someone.
Also, we set up that the king really likes Joe.
He's really into Joe.
And there's this whole, is he using her for political reasons, or does he legitimately like her? There's this whole sort of thing about that.
Well, and also, the Doctor saves the Ice Warrior against his better judgment. Because, and this is actually, I think, the important part about this serial, is that the Doctor is actually a little prejudiced in this. He automatically assumes that the Ice Warriors are the people, or the ones that are causing this.
Because they're kind of at a point in their history where he's like, you're a race of warriors, you're soldiers. And he's like, nah, we gave that up. We're peaceful now. And the Doctor's like, okay. I'm not buying that. But it's interesting because every time we've seen the Ice Warriors before or since.
Well, we don't know since.
I mean, since I've seen them in the new series. I mean, that's part of what makes the Ice Warriors great, is that they are just sort of people.
And I think that's the thing that always appealed to me on this, because this felt like the equivalent of like the Star Wars cantina to me in Doctor Who. Seeing all these people that were just people, or these aliens that were just people, and not something bigger than that. They weren't just all of a sudden, well, you have green skin, so you're evil. They had legitimate personalities that were coming through, and I think that's why I've always really taken to the Ice Warriors, because of this particular story allowing that to happen.
Well, it is nice to see, I mean, this race that's been used and kind of defined is like warriors, and it's nice to see them like heading up like a peace conference sort of thing, where they're just trying to make sure peace happens. It's growth.
Yeah, and nothing annoys me more than, like, you have this sci-fi race, and it's like, every single person in that race is, the same. They're all evil, or they're all great. They're all, like, uniform. And it's like, that's not how it works. Why are humans the only, group that's, like, varied and diverse?
Well, man, how are you enjoying Doctor Who at all?
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
That's like a quarter, it's like a three quarters of the races in Doctor Who.
Except for the like, green people, apparently. Like, because you have, the Ice Warriors, who are a little bit ambiguous. And also, I feel like the Silurians as well are, they vary in...
And you get a little bit of that from the Draconians, which I guess you'll come into in a few weeks, or in a few episodes. But, so yeah, that, I think you're right.
just lizard people.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely, like, the Daleks, all bad. Cybermen, all bad.
Although, anytime they do something with the Daleks where it's like, oh man, could there be a good Dalek? Those are always good episodes.
There legitimately was some good Daleks in that second Doctor serial. It was the evil of the Daleks. I get power and evil mixed up because they're very similar titles.
In the comic strips, there was a Cyberman called Croton. It may not have been Croton, but he was a good Cyberman. And he was actually the Doctor's companion for a while in the comics.
Oh, wow. Well, there's also Eleven had a Cyberman.
The Cyberhead.
Yeah. Handles, right?
Yeah.
That was more like a pet rock, I guess. But yeah, we're at the end of episode one, and we are now into episode two, which I've called The Delegate's Desecration. So yeah, the shrine falls and the Doctor jumps in and saves the Ice Warrior. But the Doctor wants to investigate because he's like, that's sketchy. And of course, Hepish is like, no, it's evil stuff.
I love the king being like, yeah, no, somebody was murdered, but it's not a big deal. It's not something you guys need to worry about. It's internal. It's fine. Like, just being like, yeah, we've got a lot of, like, civil unrest happening, but you don't think about it.
Well, also, the equivalent of his father. Like, these two men, like, raised him, essentially.
They're all talking about it, and Joe sneaks away for a second and goes back to the shrine and finds something, which is, if I'm not mistaken, it was later revealed to be planted there.
Yes.
To sort of frame the Ice Warriors.
Yeah, because the Doctor's suspicious of the Ice Warriors. That's who she goes and checks out, and she finds
I don't remember what it was.
It's a little device. that makes them look guilty.
It's like a cube or something. Some, you know, MacGuffin. But they're saying the negotiations can only be done under peace, so they're not sure if they can let Peladon in and all that. But they're going to go discuss it. And then this is when, like, Peladon, King Peladon, talks to Joe and tries to get him on her side. But he's also like, it's just really nice hanging out with young people my own age.
Someone my age, yeah.
And all I could think of during this whole thing is Parks and Rec with, like, the Ice King, you know, Ben Wyatt and his failed early political career. This, it kept popping in my head all the time because he's, like, such a young king. And he's probably going to mess something up and he's worried about it.
That's amazing. But well, yeah, Jo gets kind of hurt because she's like, I thought, you know, you liked me and you're just trying to get me on your side so that I can help you with the Federation.
And then she leaves, like, I'm not helping you.
Yeah, like, screw you.
For playing with my emotions. And then he's bummed out because I think he does legitimately like her.
I mean, his whole thing throughout, like, trying to have a relationship with her is like, I'm a king, I can't just be a person. And Joe's like, oh, I'm just lying about being a princess, so I don't get that at all. I just want you to be a human being, not you know, make all your decisions about with political reasons and who it will help and who it will hurt and all that.
So then we get a scene that basically pretty much confirms that Hepish is bad.
Not great.
He's ordered this guard to basically destroy the doctor, so he's not great.
The guard who is mute.
Why is he mute?
I think he just is.
Oh. Did he have his tongue cut out or something? That happens a lot.
He's just mute. That happens too.
Grun is his name.
Grunt? Did you say his name was Grunt?
Grun. G-R-U-N.
I wonder if that was almost a pun on Grunt, because he doesn't talk.
And they're like, just drop the T.
Yeah. That's sci-fi.
I do think the indication is that he may have his tongue removed or something like that, because he is the king's champion. He's always with the king, so the idea is he wouldn't be able to discuss anything that was secrets of the state or something like that. So, but that's never said, I don't believe. That's just kind of conjecture.
It's good conjecture. Good headcanon. Makes sense. So yeah, the thing Joe found was Martian, and the doctor says they're maybe trying to colonize because there's stuff on this planet.
It's full of minerals, yeah.
Trisilicate.
Ooh. I always think it should be trillium because that's just fun to say.
Anytime there's any kind of
space
mineral
thing. Yeah,
you want it to be trillium. It is fun to say.
So they discuss, like, who they think could be who could be behind all this, and the doctor is heavily leaning on,
yeah, he's like, it's ice warriors. Done, solved it.
They are interrupted by the head in the jar, what, Arcturus, freaking out basically, and the doctor comes in and, like, rewires his system because it's
missing.
Yeah, it's been tampered with.
It's like life support system, part of it has been pulled out.
The doctor, of course, thinks it's the Ice Warrior. And then it doesn't help that Joe finds the cube. That's what it was. That's the other cube. The life support thing.
The life support thing she finds in like their quarters, I guess.
Yeah, because she goes and sneaks around because she's like, this is a good opportunity. Everybody is here looking at the head in the jar. I can go look around for clues. Scooby-Doo my way out of this. But then an Ice Warrior comes in and she hides. But this is the first time that she's hidden, like, a character in Doctor Who has hidden in plain sight, but then got caught.
Someone actually saw them.
Yeah. There's so much hiding in plain sight, but no one sees them. But this time she's hiding behind a curtain and, like, the Ice Warrior comes in and is like, I can see your feet.
She's like, oh man, that has worked every time before. I don't know.
And she's like, why do you have this cube? And he's like, that's not ours.
Why were you planting this cube in my room?
Yeah, so now the Ice Warriors think Joe and the Doctor are doing sneaky shit.
And to be fair, they are suspicious. They're not supposed to be there.
Their suspicions are well-founded. They've snuck their way into this group of delegates. Because the Ice Warrior thinks that the Earth is trying to wiggle their way into Peladon. So the Doctor thinks the Ice Warriors are trying to take over, and the Ice Warriors think Earth is trying to take over, and they're both wrong. So the Ice Warrior puts Joe in a room, locks her up in there, but she climbs out the window.
Yes. With her escapology.
And then she climbs back in through another window and bumps into the Beast, which is Agador, right?
Yes, Agador.
I don't, like, she doesn't have, like, a big confrontation with it. She just sort of sees it and runs away.
Sees it and runs, yeah.
And then she runs into the Ice Warriors and says that I saw this Beast, and they think she's lying. Because no one believes the female companions when they say they saw something.
believes anyone. It's always just like, no, you didn't see that.
Usually it's like, oh, it's you're just super stressed out and stuff, so you're just, it was a hallucination. But this time they're like, you're lying to us and trying to trick us. So the doctor says that there wasn't a plan to kill the guy in the jar. It was because removing that thing wouldn't kill him. It would just put him in a coma, which is still pretty bad. But
I mean, I definitely don't like, oh, we're not going to kill you. We're just going to put you in a coma. I mean, I still don't want to be in a coma.
I'm confused.
About?
Wait, does the doctor say that or does the Ice Warrior say that?
What are you confused about?
I don't know where the doctor is. Because the doctor bumps into the beast, too. He's running. Is he running around looking for Joe?
I believe so.
Well, here's the thing.
Well, the beast has been, like, sicked on him because they wanted to get the doctor out of the way.
And then he's running around in this, like, labyrinth, basically.
Yeah, he gets away from it by, like, escaping into the tunnels. And the tunnels lead to the shrine.
And he gets out and he sees the shrine and he touches it and is immediately grabbed and taken away. And they're like, you touched our shrine. That's bad. That's real bad, yo.
He is defiling a sacred place.
And of course the king has no choice but to sentence him to death.
Literally, that's like, it's not an option to be like, you no, it's all right. Pardoning is not an option. He's like, I don't know what you want me to do. The rules say I have to kill you. I'm not happy about it, but I gotta do what I gotta do.
It's like, my dad turned into you. It's funny when you think about it. Just give it a second.
He's a thinker.
But that's the end of episode two, is you gotta die. And we're now into episode three, which I've called Trial by Combat, which made Tony so happy.
Guys, I love Gladiator episodes. I love Gladiator episodes so much. Because basically what happens is, like, we have to kill you. And then Joe's like, please no?
Well, actually, the Ice Warrior comes to the Doctor's defense.
Oh, that's true. Because the Doctor saved him earlier.
Says he didn't know, he doesn't know what the law is here.
So he's like, okay, the only other option besides just straight up executing you is to have you fight my champion to the death. It's a Gladiator episode! There was a moment where the doctor's like, see, so the fighting's not even necessary anymore. And I was like, I'm gonna be so disappointed if he does not fight someone to the death.
don't like promise a big pit fight and then not show us a pit fight.
There's a, they call it the pit, and there is a moment where I was like, they're like, no, you have to fight. And I was like, pit.
I've seen that happen too, where like a show will be like hinting that they're going to do something awesome.
The heist episode of Elementary.
Oh my god, yes. Made me so mad.
They're like, oh yeah, they set up this heist where he was going to have to break into, I don't even remember what it was, some company and steal some things. And then like the main person turns up dead and it's just the same episode of Elementary that it always is.
They're like, we're not doing the heist anymore because there was a murder there and we can just go investigate it. So we got in anyway. And it's like, that's...
How dare you set up a heist and then not do a heist?
That's so boring. Why would you do that?
Anyway, we're not a podcast about Elementary.
Yeah, they're going to have to do a trial by combat, which makes Joe disappointed. She's like, that's not much better. Just let him go. Why are you being this way?
Paladin's so great. He's such a great character. Because he's so young and he's just like, I'm just trying my best, please.
And then he asks her to marry him? Like, I don't think he can read a room very well.
Literally, Joe's like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you serious? And he's like, no, you know, like, diplomatically, it makes a lot of sense. And I super have the hots for you because you're like the first woman my age I've ever met. I thought this would go great.
It was either you or Alpha Centauri. So.
Well, and also something we haven't talked about is the fact that he's actually half Earthling, because his mother was from Earth as well.
He's half human on his mother's side.
Yeah.
Like someone else we know, maybe. Or maybe not.
Kind of.
So there was that connection as well.
Yeah, because this whole thing about like his mother teaching him stuff that maybe went contrary to the
traditions.
Yeah.
And the more traditional religious stuff of Paladin.
Kind of Spockish in a way. Why is it always if there's like an alien creature who has a human parent, it's always the mother.
Because it's supposed to be like nurturing, and it's always like, they taught me feelings. And that's something in popular culture that we believe is something moms do. I mean, that's why.
All right.
There's your answer.
It would seem more likely if like there was aliens that it would be the dudes trying to mate with them.
Well, and also it wouldn't, I mean, if you look at it from a point of view of that kind of society, the bloodline wouldn't be carried through a female. The bloodline has to be carried from a king, typically, for those kinds of things. So it makes sense in a kind of feudal society that that's the case.
Learning. That's what we're doing today. I'm glad there's always smarter people than I am on this show. Hepish has now decided to help the doctor.
Basically, he wants him to escape so that he doesn't have to deal with him one way or the other. But he's like, look, if you just get off this planet and leave, then you're not my problem anymore.
If he also gets killed by their champion, he also won't be his problem anymore, will he?
Yeah, it's win-win for him.
Okay, so why is he helping him escape?
I think maybe he just genuinely doesn't want him to die. He's just like, look, I've got some political things I'm trying to do, but if no one has to die, that'd probably be better.
Then why did he tell the guard to destroy the doctor?
I don't know, man. I'm trying.
Hepish's motivations seems a little murky to me right now.
I think it also makes the doctor look guiltier.
Oh, if he, like, escapes?
Yeah.
I think he's also saying he just tells the doctor he doesn't trust the Federation, and maybe he's just trying to get him on his side?
It felt like it made sense when it was happening, and now that you're bringing up all these points, I'm uncertain.
To be fair, I watched this serial a couple weeks ago, so some of the finer details have gotten a little foggy.
Well, it's Doctor Who in the 70s. Don't overthink it.
It's just happening because the plot needs to move forward.
Well, we had to get the Doctor into the tunnel so he could sing to Agador.
Yes! That was amazing. He says it's a Venusian.
A Venusian lullaby. Yeah.
Which he previously said a part of a Venusian lullaby in the demons, or the daemons, however you want to pronounce it, to ward off Bach. I wonder if it's the same one, or if it's a different one.
I don't believe it's the same, because this time when he sung it, he actually sings it to God Rest You Merry Gentlemen. I actually have the lyrics here if you'd like me to attempt to sing it.
Please!
Yes!
I love this Venusian lullaby, and this is something that kind of pops up in a lot of audios to some extent. I think we've got to hear Peter Davison sing it, and it's been in a lot of books and things too. But it is, I won't pronounce this stuff right because, you know, it's Venusian. Cloak Clyde, Apartha, Mine and Clatch, Arun, Arun, Arun. Clarkida, Sheena, Tira, Notch, Arun, 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 Arun. So,
yay! I loved it.
And the lyrics that are in the translation that he gives in the daemons is, close your eyes, my darling. Well, at least three of them. But again, that's for the version that was in that. I don't believe it's the same. I think it's a different set, different writer, different everything. So my guess is that those are not the same at all.
Can I just say, his voice is amazing.
Yeah, he sings really well. We're talking about you, Ashley.
You know, it's been a while.
And the doctor, I was surprised at how well the doctor could sing. I don't know why he's sung opera. And
yeah, I think of all the doctors, he's one of the most well played in terms of the things that he had done to that point. Of course, both Hartnell and Troughton were very classical actors. Pertwee's background was insane. It's not singing, but look up, if you've never heard it, there's a thing, it came out on a record called I Am the Doctor, and it was kind of this poem that he read behind the Doctor Who theme. Like, again, he didn't really sing it, but it's definitely musical, and it's pretty fun.
That sounds awesome.
Also, I mean, before Doctor Who, he did a lot of stuff where he was doing voices and things. Like, I think I heard, like, this is, like, one of the first projects he'd ever really done that he did in his own voice. So he's probably got some, like, good vocal training, basically. Mm.
I can never remember the character's name because it's more of a British thing and I'm not familiar with it. But the scarecrow that he did.
We watched a part of that and it scared the crap out of me. Apparently it's like a beloved character. I couldn't sleep after we watched part of it.
Was that before he did Doctor Who? I think that was after. Oh, was it after? Couldn't remember.
Apparently he's in the UK. He's almost more popular for that than he was Doctor Who.
That's insanity. Wow.
Yeah, like, it was a big, big thing. So.
I find it very terrifying.
Or at least on equal level because of it. What was it called? Wurzel Gummidge. And it was 79 to 81. And also 87 to 89. So it came back for a little while.
True facts!
Like, the clip that we watched, he was, like, hitting on another scarecrow who was just a scarecrow. And I was like, what? What is this?
That makes me excited for humanity.
I think that's what we're going to do when we finish watching all of Doctor Who. We're just going to watch all of Wurzel Gummidge.
Please don't do that to me.
Just to scar Tony. Oh. He does a really good voice in it. So he apparently did a lot of comedy voices on radio and stuff before.
Yeah, he was a well-known comedy actor. And also, he really owned the role of Doctor Who. Years ago, I had a chance to meet John Levine, who played Benton. And he would he told stories of how John Pertwee, like Bessie, his car, was actually his car. Like, he owned that. So they would all drive home because they were filming near where they all lived. So he would drive them all home, but they would go home in their costumes and then they would just come back. But he goes, John, I need you to go in. I need you to just run into this pharmacy, and I want you to run right up to the counter, and I want you to ask for an aspirin, or I want you to hit your head and then ask for an aspirin. And he goes, why? He's like, just do it. So they pull out. And he runs in and does it because John Pertwee, and you know, you didn't say no to John. And what he didn't take in consideration is that the floor was tile, and he was still wearing his combat boots. So he hit the floor, and as soon as he did it, he like slides into the counter and actually hits his head, and he like gets up dazed, and he goes, "Oh, do you have an aspirin?" And at that moment, John Pertwee walks in there and goes, "There you are, Benton! I've been looking for you!" And he would do that, and then, like, everyone in the place just, like, applauds. And they just do this huge flourish and run out and get back in Bessie and drive off.
That's amazing!
So, I mean, John Pertwee would just do those kinds of things. He just, like, owned that role to an extent that, like, no one else. I mean, I think Tom Baker may have to some extent at some point during his tenure, but I think John Pertwee legitimately loved being that character and would be that character even when he wasn't there.
That's awesome. I feel like if you're playing a character that big, the temptation to do that must be immense.
Well, and at the time, like, everyone knew Doctor Who in Britain. I mean, this isn't something people didn't watch. I mean, regardless of how good it was, Saturday night at tea time in the early 1970s, that's the only thing that was on. So, I mean, everyone knew that. So it was, yeah. I mean, if I were playing a character like that, I would own it. I don't think there's any other way you could, you know?
You'd want to just walk into, like, restaurants, do a bit, and then leave, because you know that everyone would be like, "Do you remember that? It was awesome!"
It was a great story that John Levine looks very fondly on those guys, and that was the first year I went to Timegate, actually. He was the guest there, and
how awesome.
It was a lot of fun, and he told some great stories about John.
Oh man, that sounds fantastic. I love Benton, so yeah.
As we've previously established.
Better than Yates.
Joe loves Benton more than most unit people.
You might be interested to know that they have, in the audios, they've brought him back into the new unit stories. Oh, and Yates. They're both there. Benton left the military to become a used car salesman, though.
Why?
Oh, no.
That's in the books and such, so.
That's like the saddest fate I could think of to give someone, used car salesman.
All used car salesmen are like slimy, and Benton's nice.
I mean, I don't want to make like used car salesmen mad, but you know, it's like becoming a lawyer. You know what's up. You know what people think.
I personally know a used car salesman, and yeah, he's slimy. Oh, man.
I have zero idea where we are in the episode.
Yeah, the doctor has, where we were is the doctor had made that little magnifying glass thing and hypnotized the
Agador. And it basically becomes just a real big puppy.
Well, and the other thing to notice is he actually put that on the top of the sonic screwdriver. So he actually did use the sonic screwdriver in this one. He just used it with an attachment, which I don't think had ever been seen at this point either. I'm not sure it's been seen since.
Huh. Which I imagine he just put it on there so it would rotate. While he's hypnotizing the beast, Joe comes in.
And rescues him.
Yeah, and like scares the beast off of the torch. The doctor
is really mad about it.
Yeah, he almost becomes the dickish thing he sometimes does with Joe, but he gets out of it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he's mad, and then he's like, "Oh, you know what? I'm just crabby. I maybe need to like eat lunch or something." No, he doesn't say that, but he does apologize.
Yeah, he's like, "You didn't know. There's a giant beast in front of me. And you're trying to protect me." And
that's sweet. Her very brave.
Yeah, he does.
I think he actually boops her on the nose. I'm not certain.
That sounds like something he'd do. He also accidentally hypnotizes her at one point during it, too.
He's like, oh, I was just using this to hypnotize the beast. And she's just, like, staring off into space. Joe? Joe!
So then the doctor goes to King Peladon and says that the...
He wanted to say Paladin, by the way.
Which they've been saying this beast is a ghost. Which I feel like Doctor Who doesn't know what ghost is after this and Day of the Daleks. This is even less of a ghost than the soldiers from Day of the Daleks are ghosts. This is a very physical, furry, giant beast. But he says it's not a ghost and that the beast is being used by someone. And then they're like, oh, okay. Well, anyway, it's time to throw you in the pit. Thanks for coming back.
Pit.
They climb down these ropes into the pit, and then there's like a really good fight scene.
Oh, it's really good.
It's really well choreographed.
Which we're back from, we had a couple of rubbish choreographed
Day of the Daleks. Fight
scenes in Day of the Daleks.
Yeah. Day of the Daleks was very, very rough.
We're back.
Because that's one thing I'll say about like the third Doctor season is the fight scenes have gotten like, but the action sequences have gotten really, really good. Like I said, that Day of the Daleks was a bit of a rough patch.
I think it was the whole episode, like the production of it was very rushed.
But this one gets back on form. They fight. There's even this, the whole, you know, one of them gets the upper hand and the other one gets the upper hand. It's going back and forth. There's wrestling. They get their foot stuck in. One of them gets their foot stuck in the ropes. It's great.
Yeah, I think that's the Doctor. And then Hepish throws a sword down.
That's not fair.
That jerk.
But the Doctor gets the sword away from him and, like, has the advantage to kill him, but will not do it.
He ends up strangling him, like, with the ropes? Is that...
He runs after him, and when he does, his head gets stuck in the ropes. And then the Doctor, like, just takes it and starts strangling him.
That's the Champion of the King. He just rammed his head straight into the ropes. Man, he's the best one they got. And he did that to himself.
They're more worried about fashion.
The cape flourishes.
But the Doctor will not kill him, and then...
Because that's how Gladiator episodes end, every time. That's why I love him so much.
You're gonna love Thor Ragnarok, aren't you?
Probably, yes!
But then Arcturus shoots his laser, and to be fair, I was a little confused about what had happened.
Oh, it happens very quickly and in close-ups, and I'm like, who died? What? Who shot what? Everyone, there was like a flash of light, and now everyone's very upset. And then, like, the episode's over.
They explain it in the next episode, which is, I've called it episode 4, Doctor Who Civil War. They eventually explain what all happened. I'm like, well, thank you. I was a bit confused.
What happened, Joe?
We learned that Arcturus and Hepish were basically in cahoots and causing all this chaos and futzing around with stuff.
Neither one of them wanted
Peladon to,
be in the Federation. I thought his deal was that he didn't want them in there because, like, Peladon and Earth would be, like, too close. And that would fuck up some diplomacy shit.
Space politics.
I love space politics.
I do too.
I know you don't care for it.
I have mixed feelings about it. Like, I'm okay with it if it's interesting, but if it's like the Star Wars prequels, I'm less interested. Because I think you also need to have like a good story and character stuff going on and not just
stuff
space
happening
politics.
On an emotional level.
Yeah, you have to have both of those things for it to really work. And I don't feel like the Star Wars prequels necessarily have that.
That's one thing I really like about this episode, though, is that there's a lot of, like, nicely balanced stuff of, like, people who are dealing with the conflict of, like, doing diplomatic, political stuff, and also, you know, being humans and people on an emotional level. And, like, specifically the king has, like, a lot of back and forth on that. It's like, I need to be the king and do certain things, but also I'm 12 and doing my best. He's not 12, but he's very young.
Right.
Yeah, I think the big objection to them being in the Federation is that because the king's mom was from Earth, that they would just be too close and, like, it would give Earth the upper hand in Federation business.
Arcturus is a poor, they're poor in mineral wealth, so they were hoping to actually arrange a separate mining treaty with Peladon that didn't go through the Federation.
Yeah, that's what my next note says. Head wanted minerals.
Head wanted minerals. Great notes.
Thank you. So they're just worried that the Federation's going to fight each other, and Peladon's going to be the battlefield, because stuff's gotten messy. And there's talks about replacing Hepish, because...
The Doctor says he needs to replace Hepish.
Because he's, being a jerk. And so now there's going to be civil war. There's going to be...
Because if he replaces Hepish, there's people who are... He's a high priest. There are people who are loyal to him.
Here's the thing I've never thought about before. Peladon would be a horrible battlefield for a war. It's nothing but mountains.
Like, you might need to schedule your battle.
I think that's why most of the battles take place, like, inside the castle. They're like, it's flat here. That's...
There's a floor here.
It's the only place where there's room.
So
the king wants the Federation's like backing. Like, if I replace him, there is going to be a civil war, and I want you guys to back me up. And the Federation's like, that sounds messy. We'll think about it.
And there's also this whole thing of like the Doctor and Joe were witnesses to everything, but the Doctor's like, we can't necessarily be witnesses.
Yeah, they seem to remember in this episode that they're not actually the delegates. Because she was like, well, can't we just tell him? And the Doctor's like, do you remember that we're not supposed to be here? And she's like, oh, shit, yeah.
We're technically imposters.
I forgot. We've just been doing such a good job being the Earth delegates that I forgot we weren't actually the Earth delegates.
And that I'm from the past.
Oh, which, by the way, yeah, we didn't even mention, like, the TARDIS works in this serial.
It is heavily implied that, like, it's straight up said that the Time Lords sort of dropped them off there. Yeah. And I assume they're the reason why the Earth delegates get held up in the first place.
In the books, there's actually a story called Legacy, a book called Legacy, and it takes place on Peladon. And the there's kind of a pre-credit scene that actually has some Time Lords, and they're kind of looking at the way things are going in places, and they're like, we can't mess with this, but you know what? We can send the Doctor off. Well, he's not allowed to go. They're like, but we can take him. And that they can kind of pretty much control him at this point.
That's kind of sketchy.
I mean, the Time Lords are sketchy.
And incident, well, this won't mean anything to you, but it's actually a character that you meet that's doing things, questionable things in The Deadly Assassin, which is several seasons out. But it's actually a Time Lord that you meet in there. The books would retcon a lot of things. But yeah, it's pretty intriguing, that concept.
Yeah, I like the Time Lords as people are like, we're not going to interfere, but if we just, you know, the Doctor happens to be in the proximity, he'll interfere, and we don't know anything about it.
It sounds like a lot of the logic that certain people use for Batman killing people. Like, I don't have to kill you, but I can let you die. Some like real, you're basically doing the thing. You're basically helping just by putting the Doctor there. But you're like, no, I didn't do it.
And I didn't stop the Doctor.
Well, the Time Lords also have this Celestial Intervention Agency, or CIA. And they're a group that isn't part of the Time Lord government, but they'll mess around with things. They kind of work outside of the official government. They're almost like a cult group that people like know exists, but they don't admit it exists. And they just kind of they just turn their heads and let them do whatever they do. Because it's usually for the benefit of the Time Lords.
The Time Lords are so sketchy. They're just too powerful and they know it.
the guard tries to take out Hepish, the mute guard, Gurn.
Yeah, he kind of has a change of heart, I guess. And he does not like being told to kill people.
But then he gets taken
out.
And,
you know, the Doctor spared his life, so he probably feels some responsibility about that.
But he does not succeed in taking out Hepish. Hepish hits him with a rock. Giant rock. Rude.
I said that they're trying to convince the Federation to back the king. Everyone pretty much is on board, except for Alpha Centauri.
Who does agree, but under protest.
Yeah, I think out of everyone there, they're the biggest pacifist.
I just imagine her being like the hall monitor in school. And she's like, no, we can't do that. That's not the rules. Go to the office and get a pass.
The other people, and they're like, they won't do anything. And it's like, leave them alone. They're my favorite. They're delightful. And my favorite. They can object all they want.
You like Centauri, huh?
I do. I'm kind of bummed that we didn't watch this before they turned back up.
In Empress of Mars?
Yeah, because that would have been really exciting.
Because otherwise, I'm like, oh, that's a cool alien. We don't know who that is. But basically, stuff sort of escalates, and then there's a big fight in the throne room, I guess. Yeah. Whatever you want to call that. The king gets held at sword point. Just a lot of fighting. And then the Doctor hypnotizes Agador again and brings Agador into the throne room. And the delegates are all there too. It's basically everything's coming to a head, just talking stuff out and fighting stuff out, basically. And the doctor brings Agador in and is like, look at this. I've taken control of this big animal. And that's what it was. This is all was all Hepish's doing. He was trying to do bad stuff.
Right. And it's just an animal. It's not a god or a ghost. It's just this big puppy that's been trained.
And then Hepish tries to take control of Agador, but then Agador attacks Hepish.
Yep.
Kills him, basically. He's slowly dying, and he dies in the king's arms.
Sad.
It's a little sad.
Because all his father figures are gone now. And it's really sad to see him, I mean, because I think it comes out that he killed Torbis, does it not?
Yeah, I think so.
And so, like, these two people raised him, and one of them killed the other and sort of betrayed him, and now he's dead. That's a rough day.
It really is.
That's a real rough day.
He tells the other guards that were on Hepish's side to lay down their arms, and he says there will be no punishments. We're gonna start with a clean slate. Things have been messy. Let's just act like this didn't happen, you guys.
Let's just pretend there wasn't a revolution.
And that pretty much wraps up the thing. So does Peladon get into the Federation?
They do get into the Federation. I don't think it actually says it on this. But the other thing at the end of this is Joe and the doctor are like, oh, we'll watch the coronation. And then the actual Earth delegate shows up and they're like, or we can just escape out the back and go into the TARDIS.
Right. Oh, and also he basically, Agador is like a big puppy dog now and just like runs up to the doctor. And I was like, please let him come on the TARDIS.
He's just running around the corridors, just hanging out. And they're like, oh, no. But he's like, oh, no, he's fine.
I'm such a big fan of that. When Dickie had that one pet that she had.
Oh, God, that Barbara just straight up murdered?
Yes, she did. She had, like, this big, scary alien lizard that she was like, that's just my dog. I'm such a big fan of that.
And also, we have an emotional wrap-up with the king and Joe. They kiss.
They do. They had a very nice relationship. A lot of times when the companion sometimes has a love interest, I'm bored. I'm like, I don't care about this at all. But I thought they were cute.
Yeah. And she's like, I'm not actually a real princess. And he's like, so? And she's like, I'm also kind of not from this time. And I'm kind of from Earth. Look, it's just not going to work out. I like you and all, but
like, you're cute. And I'm sorry I have to go. I think she wanted to stay. I think she almost did.
So it's a little bittersweet.
Yeah.
They kept trying to marry Joe off. It's just funny. That's just the way they're just like, we always need a way to write Joe out in case we need to write her out.
I hope it's not like, no, listen, I got this dude waiting on me back home, this Yates fella. Like, she sort of forgets about him after being like, I'm going out on a date with Yates. And it's like, wait a second, there's a king here.
Wait a minute.
Rank has its privileges.
I way traded the fuck up.
But yeah, they get out of there once the real Earth delegate shows up. And that's the end of the serial. It's the end of The Curse of Peladon. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back for final thoughts.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered earwigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
It is time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Ashley, you want to go first?
Sure. So this is probably my all-time favorite Doctor Who serial. I have been a fan of this show for years and years and years, and I have very fond memories of the first time I remember watching this one. It was a Sunday morning. I was probably like 6 years old, and this came on, and we would record it on Saturday nights, and we would watch it the next day. So I have very fond memories of this particular story, specifically for the Ice Warrior characters, how they made them more for lack of a better term, human. There were good guys, there were bad guys, and that was the first time I had really seen ethics come up in alien races on Doctor Who, and I love that. And to this day, that is one of my favorite stories. There are definitely issues with it, but there are incredibly fun things about it also that I enjoy, and I've always been disappointed that we haven't seen more Peladon, specifically in the new series. I think it would be super fun. I actually like to think that the Shadow Proclamation was actually born out of the Galactic Federation and is actually housed on Peladon somewhere. But that's just me and my headcanon, and I'm always coming up with ways to include Peladon. So yeah, it's a fun serial, fun location. I love the Ice Warriors. You get some new aliens. You get Alpha Centauri. You get Arcturus. You get some neat things that just seem to scream 70s Doctor Who, which is always something that's good.
This is probably my favorite three serials so far. We talked about it a little bit. But Jo is written really well in this serial. She has a lot to do instead of just sort of standing around watching the plot happen. She's very active, and she's has a lot of good lines in this one. And it's delightful. It's so much fun. We have the Galactic Federation is awesome. Anytime there, it's like, we're going to do a bunch of weird shit. And the fact that it's like set in this castle on this like cliffside, and it has a lot of sort of like medieval trappings, but it's set in the future in space. That's just, it just has the... And Gladiators, always gonna win with me. It's delightful. It's so much fun. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in this one. There are some serials of Doctor Who where you're like, there were a lot of good ideas, and there were parts of it that were fun. But overall, it was like a lot to watch. And this was just fun from start to finish. Like, every single episode, I was like, okay, great. Play the next one, play the next one, play the next one. I want to find out what's happening here. The serial was great, and I loved it, and I loved... the costume and design, that's always, if something has like a weird design, I'm gonna love it. And I really love the sort of like focus on diplomacy and ethics and just exploring a world where there are a bunch of different alien species and how do they interact with each other. That's an interesting aspect of space travel that doesn't get played around with enough.
It's four episodes, which is great. And it's so ambitious, and it's doing a lot of stuff in it, but it all comes together very well, which is surprising considering like how much stuff they're trying to do in here. And in such a short serial, you got all these different aliens, races and species and whatever. You got Alpha Centauri, who's amazing. You got Arcturus, who's really... interestingly designed. There's a lot of politics, which I'll be honest, I'm not always super into, but like it works really well. There's a good story being told, and like it's all these weird elements that actually fit together. It's not just, and let's do this because it's weird.
And there's a good balance of politics and just emotional character stuff that's happening at the same time and work together.
And Joe is being talked to as an equal and not being talked down to, which needs to happen more often. I love Joe. I just feel like she's sometimes the writers are not writing her as well as they could be. And this is the first time I feel like she was written really solidly. Yeah, all in all, it was a lot of fun. That's another thing. It's like there's a lot of politics which can tend to be a bit dry or boring, and this episode is so much fun. So much fun.
Delightful is the word I would use. Yeah. Delightful.
I really liked it. I'm looking forward to the next one, which the next Peladon story. See how that continues. I believe we talked prior to this, and you said it was not as good, but it's still good.
It's definitely not as good, and it's longer. I think it's a 6-episode story. There's a few other little things with it, but it still has all the elements that you want for the most part. The other thing to do if people are interested in these kinds of things and getting a little more insight from the authors, if you can track down the old Target novelizations from a lot of these old these serials, specifically ones that the writer wrote the novelization of, they will add a lot of elements in there that they didn't get into the TV show. And I think that's the case in some of these particular stories, or even when like Terrence Dix writes the story or the novel of the story, he'll write it from the author's original notes. So they'll kind of put that thing in there. So that's something to consider also to get a little more insight into these stories. And I want to think that some of that is done in Monster of Peladon in the novel, and maybe Curse as well. So just another way to get a little different take on what what the author was looking for.
Well, it's really nice to see. I'd like to start picking those up just to see what the difference between what, you know, was planned and imagined and what actually came about because of, you know, the limitations of time and money and all that it takes to make a TV show happen. And some of the episodes that you can tell had like a really great idea and you know, really strong basis that you can tell just kind of like maybe in production didn't quite become what it could have been. I'd like to pick up the novels for that and see, oh, that's why that happened. Okay.
I've also heard that like sometimes the novelization will have a stronger impact on people's
memory.
Memory and opinion of it. Like for example, Day of the Daleks. I don't think Day of the Daleks is a very good serial, but it's like it's an episode that a lot of people like. I think a lot of it is actually that most people were reading the novelization or listening to the stuff they recorded off TV because they didn't have like the video readily available. So they were like listening to it. So they didn't get to see that there was the production value was not great. There was only three Daleks and everything was kind of wobbly. And also reading the novelization incorporated stuff that was cut out. Like they brought back that time travel bit at the beginning of the episode, which I felt like needed to be brought back. So like it's in your mind. If you're reading a book, you can imagine whatever with your mind. So it's a little bit better. So
your imagination
is
always going to have like the best quality, the best production quality of anything.
Yeah. So sometimes the novelizations can almost be better in a way just because it's not limited.
Yeah, absolutely. And some of those novelizations are really fantastic. And I think they're really, really well done that way. So, and you get that insight. So, I know like, Remembrance of the Daleks and some of those, they really add a lot to the stories.
I've only read two. One was okay, and the other one was interesting. I read Web of Fear, which was kind of weird because it incorporates a lot of like knowledge from the future sort of thing. So it's like just assuming you already know that the Brigadier is a good guy, and whereas in the episode itself it's a little ambiguous, but in the novel it's like, hey, this is the first time we met Brig, isn't that cool? But and the other one I read was a novelization of the Daleks, which has a different origin story for Ian and Barbara, which is pretty interesting.
Which was the first novel ever written, the first Doctor Who novel ever put out.
Yeah, that's why I read it. I'm just gonna start trying to go through all the books in order.
I don't know if you guys have picked up on this, but Joe likes doing things in order, even if there's 50 years of it.
I've been reading the books. I've been reading the comic strips and the Dalek comics and the Doctor Who comics are. Oh my goodness. The comic strips where he's got two grandchildren.
Oh yeah. Oh, so you're going way back. There's nothing canonical about those old TV action and all those strips. But they're fun. They're fun though.
You've gotten sucked so far into this.
I know.
Do you remember when like Ray Friesen was trying to get you to watch an episode and you were like, eh?
I remember the first time I watched New Who, and we started from 9. There was like Plastic Mickey, and then the next episode was Farting Aliens, and I'm like, what? What are you trying to get me into?
You weren't having it.
And now I'm just like, I'm so far into it, it's crazy.
Sitting here in your TARDIS shirt doing a podcast, talking about the comics.
The very first time I ever met you, like, we were talking about something else, and then, of course, anytime I'm talking to anyone, I go on to Doctor Who. And you're like, yeah, some people want me to watch it, but I really only want to start if I start at the very beginning. So that's literally the first thing I ever met you in terms of talking to Doctor Who. I'm like, oh, that guy's never getting into this show.
Literally the amount of convincing it took to get him to watch New Who with me was insane.
I'd watched all of the first Doctor by the time I watched any New, well, started New Who from 9.
Yeah, but now we're doing this, so I feel like
I got in my way.
Who's won? Yeah.
But I have seen all of New Who now, too, so you can do both.
To be fair, I'm really, really glad that we've started doing this podcast and watching them all in order, because this most recent season of Doctor Who, it's made it a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah.
There have been all these little things where I've been like, ah!
Like, imagine if you hadn't seen, like, 10th Planet. I feel like having watched the 10th Planet and all of the first Doctor, that last finale was just so much better, because you're like, oh my god, it's the first Doctor!
And we're like, that's my boy!
Yeah.
My boy's back!
Whereas before, you'd probably been like, oh cool, it's the first Doctor, but now you're like, I know him!
Yeah.
So it's great. Anyway, that was the Curse of Peladon. Do you have anything you would like to plug, sir?
I do a few different things in the world of Doctor Who. First of all, I'm actually on a podcast called The Oncoming Storm, and we're actually going to be wrapping up this year. We talk about spin-off media, such as novels and comics, the things you were talking about. And audios, we go through the Big Finish audios. And we are going to be finishing the Virgin New Adventures this year, which will take us all the way through the very first Eighth Doctor novelization. And then that's when they switched over to BBC Books. And we're going to call it quits for a little bit and try to not have to read so much. We've been doing this for 5 years, almost six by the end of this. And we will have read 60 Doctor Who books. We will have listened to well over 100 audios, maybe closer to 200, and these things, and talked about them and those kinds of things. So we've got a huge backlog of things there, which I don't believe that backlog's going anywhere, and we may come back. We may just take a hiatus. The other thing I do is I am the co-director of the Gallifrey track at Wholanta. I still want to call it Timegate, but it is Wholanta in Atlanta, Georgia. That is a Doctor Who convention and British culture, a British media convention, and they do lots of things there, and I help run that Doctor Who track. I was able to be on a panel with Tony this time, and I think you were on a couple panels too, right, Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got you did that, so I was glad to have you guys do those things.
It was awesome. It was so much fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And the last thing I do is I actually run a toy and comic book show in Cleveland, Tennessee, which is outside of Chattanooga, and that is coming up in September. So I do a lot of different things. That's not Doctor Who related, but it is transcendentally connected. So
check all that stuff out. The Oncoming Storm is part of the ESO network, isn't it?
We are part of the network. We don't do a lot with the network. We just kind of put our stuff out. But we are on there. I think it's on the beginning of our show. I don't ever listen to our show, and Josh edits it, so I don't even know where we're at half the time.
That's how I am. Joe edits it, and I don't listen to him because I don't like to hear my voice.
I will say that I'm wanting to run this year at Wholanta a Doctor Who role-playing game, and I want to run it at, it's going to be the Horns of Peladon, so it's actually going to take place on Peladon, so I'm hoping to get that in the schedule somewhere.
Nice. That would be awesome.
It is a reference to Peladon and the Horns of Nymon, which might be the worst Doctor Who serial ever made. So I'm excited to do a mashup of those two. So be on the lookout for that if you are going to attend Wholanta. There'll be a few spots for that. Probably do it for a few. I'll probably be using the new Cubicle 7 version of that game.
Very cool. If you like this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssLine.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes, please. Please do that. If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to WatchYourAssLine.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like videos of us watching the episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, and day early episodes. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wishlist, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Bisexual Brigadier for purchasing this DVD for us.
Hey, thanks, Bisexual Brigadier.
You can follow them on Tumblr at bisexualbrigadier.tumblr.com. And tune in next time when we talk about the Sea Devils.
Ooh.
Which I believe is a Silurians episode, I think?
They are the cousins, distant relatives of the Silurians, but they are their own species.
So they're kind of like the Censorites and the Oods.
Yeah, sort of. The Silurians are live underground. The Sea Devils live under the water.
Anyway, thanks for listening. Keep calm and wrestle on.
If you want to.
Bye. Say goodbye, Ashley.
Oh, I wasn't sure I was supposed to. See you soon.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.